Welcome to Chamber Talk. I'm your host, Andrew Gregson, and here today we are with Corey Flores from Bio One of Orange. Corey, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So, Corey, start off with an easy one. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, a little bit about your family.
I live in Lake Forest. I've been born and raised in Orange County. I've never lived anywhere else, so I love the county. I've lived all over it. And I have a family. I have a two-year-old with a baby on the way. We got a pug dog. And we love the area, of course, the weather and everything about it.
Must admit, the weather, that's what kept me here when I came over 20 years ago. My quick story was that my family business, we moved to Poland, and I thought after living here in California, there's no way I was going back to Poland. So we stayed here. It's definitely, the weather is great. So, you know, Bio One of Orange, very interesting topic. Can you share a little bit about, you know, the services that you provide?
So we are a crime and trauma scene cleanup company. That's our staple, but we're biohazard cleanup company, and we basically are ones that clean up hazardous situations, gross situations, and dangerous, very dangerous situations. So we don't just do crime scenes. It's hoarding and homeless encampments, and we just started doing fentanyl decontamination about a year ago. So basically, the quickest way to describe it's dangerous and disgusting type service cleanup.
And so, you know, that's quite a hot topic right now, is about fentanyl. Mm-hmm. Now, you walk us through a few of the stages that you have to, or precautions you have to take when you're actually cleaning that up, or where you come across some type of scene like that?
Yeah, it's very dangerous. When we're doing a cleanup, and we're doing one right now in LA, actually, we have to make sure we have all the right PPE, of course. And since COVID, PPE is a pretty hot topic. Everyone kind of knows what it is. Respirators, we have to have our respirators fitted so that they're sealed to our face and we can be safe, so there's no breach in our mask. We also have Narcan on site. Anytime we do the cleanup, we have spotters. So there's people that are outside of the scene who are there to rescue us in case there were some sort of breach in your mask. We have to have decon chambers and pools and specialized chemicals to treat fentanyl. Basically, it's our scariest job. It's not something that we are actively pursuing being our sole service, because I just feel like it always feels like it's not worth it. You know, man, the risk. And you can imagine, even after the cleanup, you do a cleanup and you imagine maybe you miss a spot and somebody comes into this residence and something happens. It's just one of those things that it can keep you up at night.
Right. And are you, sorry, I didn't say right as in I was mistaking all that. It's a real serious, you know, situation we're facing right now. Are you seeing that you're getting more calls for these cleanups than you did potentially a couple of years ago?
Yeah. And it's a big need. That's what we want to do, jobs that are needed. Mm-hmm. Not wanted by individuals, but definitely needed. So, and we know we're a good company and we do things right. So it is needed, and it is a lot more common, I feel, than especially with overdoses. We're doing a lot of overdose cleanup. Mm. Somebody passed away, they overdosed, they weren't found for a day or two. That's a little more common for us to clean up. Right. We have to be extra precautious because it could still be there.
So you mentioned earlier, I suppose it sort of like ties into it a little bit, the homeless encampments. Is that something else that, you know, is becoming a lot more common?
Yes, very. That's probably right now has turned into our number one most common service, or number two. It's right there with hoarding. That's our most common services, but we're doing a lot of homeless encampments. There is a lot of risks there. There's needles, there's fentanyl there. There's drug paraphernalia, there's feces and urine, and they do need professionals. Just cities, private companies, say you have a company and on your land in the back there's somebody that has an encampment there. Do you want to hire professionals, because there's risks?
And in those situations, who is the person who would reach out to you? I mean, is it the city? Who is it that calls out? Is it maybe the industry because it's their land? I mean, what's...
Yeah, a lot of times it's the city. Depends on whose property it's on. But if it's on a private property, say a building, and in the back, maybe the city complained about it and the city's on the the renter, the owners, hey, you got to get this thing cleaned up. You know, then they call us, but it depends on whose land it's on. If it's on city property, they're calling us. Private property, the owner's usually giving us a call.
And as in a general rule, because I know it depends on the size of what you're coming across, but, you know, how long does it take you to clear these types of encampments?
Oh, it could take, we've done it for, it's taken over a week. It's done it where it's a couple hours. It just depends on the size of it and the location. We actually perform some in San Juan Capistrano. They have this creek, and it's just perfect for homeless encampments.
Oh, honestly. So you gotta like bug out there and trek out there and stuff. Wow.
Yeah, you're like it feels like you're in the wilderness, and then but then you have to lug everything up this right. dirt hills, uh-huh. and so it takes more time.
Wow.
So location is a lot of that has to do with the timing.
I never even realized. I didn't realize that you'd go that far. Like that's pretty crazy. You're just immediately thinking side of the road or in a corner in somebody's work shed area, right? You're not really thinking in the middle of the wilderness there.
Oh, they want it that way, because right, then you can't see it, and it takes them a long time before they notice and say, "Hey, somebody complained. We got to take care of this, and we'll take care of it." And the next day, I'm talking the next day, it's up. Again, right, and fully functioning and a big deal. So they're
trekking that out there as well. Anyway,
that's what we figured, that they have a crew. You know, their whole crew is trekking it out there, and we don't know where the stuff comes from.
Right, right. So the areas you were mentioning to me before, just before we came online, was Orange County, LA, Riverside, San Diego. Those are your main spots. Is that like on a daily basis, weekly basis? I mean, you know, that's a lot of area to cover. How do you do it?
Yeah, there's a lot of population there. We try to stay in Orange County. Ideally, we're servicing Orange County. That's where we're based, and just not big into traveling. But we got their phone on us. We're 24/7, 365.
Cool.
It's either myself answering the phone or office staff. So you're not going to get, which the nice thing is, you're not going to get this, "Oh, press one," and I can't stand that. And I don't want any of our clients to have to go through that, especially the traumatic scenes that they're dealing with. They're going to call, and we're answering the phone, mm-hmm. and we're going to try to service as fast as possible. We have a decent sized team, and we do whatever we can, and we have to pull everything together fast. This right. isn't like we're going to do your kitchen remodel and it's going to take you, "Hey, you know, we're 6 months out. I'll be there in 6 months." When we get a call, most of the time it's like, if hoarding, doesn't matter, homeless encampment, they need it done like right away. So we don't the planning for us is like scrambling. Okay, we got a call. We got to get this on the schedule now, because there's going to be another call. So we're just one after the other. You have to do it as fast as possible or you'll lose the job. "Hey, we're booked up. I can't be there for a week." They're going to go to a competitor.
Right.
So we have to act now.
And are there quite a few other companies out there that do this? Because I'll be honest, I really don't know.
I didn't know. I actually didn't know it was an industry either until I got into it. So there is. There's more. Obviously, I'm into it now. And there is a good amount of competition. And there's some people that have, like water damage restoration companies, have expanded their service lines.
Oh, okay.
Like ServPro, maybe right. they've expanded their service lines, and there's a few others like that.
Mm.
Sometimes house cleaners or janitorial will see an opportunity, but we do have a fair amount of competition. Obviously, still niche,
right.
and not as much, but there's definitely competitors in this space.
Now, I read on your website, there seems to be quite an area there where you're talking about you're very sort of discreet and you are very empathetic with the people who are calling in. You want to share a little bit about that? Because that's something that people probably don't realize.
Yeah, discretion is one of our, it's so important to me. We don't have any logos on our vehicles. We only drive, everything's blank. So whether it's a hoarding or let's say a death of a suicide or a crime scene, we don't want to advertise that. We're here to help the family. And I'm not interested in getting other business like that. And plus, they don't appreciate it for sure. So discretion is huge for us. We try to create processes where, you know, even in the suit, because we do wear full PPE and we have a suit on, mm-hmm. we're trying to do our best to not have to go outside in the suit. So we get set up in a secure location. The suit brings a lot of attention.
Of course.
You see your neighbor come out in a suit, or somebody's working at the house in a suit, you want to know what's
going
on.
iPhone's out videoing you all of a sudden, right, right.
So we do our best, you know, we'll set up in the backyard if we can. Obviously, there's only so much we can do, but we try our best to be discreet. And then empathy and compassion is huge. I mean, it could be the worst day of their life.
Right.
If it's a death of a loved one, it's possibly the worst day of their entire life, and we're there to help them along. And even hoarding, I mean, it's really hard for somebody to get a cleanup.
Sure.
Emotionally, and it's draining and taxing on them. So we have to be caring and compassionate. And all of our staff, it's like, you don't have that quality and you can't be on this team. You don't have care for what we're doing or the individuals involved, and you don't fit in with us.
Right.
So, you know, we'd have to move on from somebody like that.
And when you're at on these locations, obviously, you know, you're I'm assuming you're bagging a lot of waste products and they're all different. What happens at the end? You can't just go down to the tip and right. load it off there. Where does all that go?
So for biohazard, what we have a contract with a company that's like a medical waste pickup company. So they're the ones that they go to hospitals, they pick up sharp containers, they come over to our warehouse, they grab our red bags. So if you ever seen the movie, with a movie or a TV show, they have those big red bags. It's mm-hmm. real. So that's where all of our bio waste goes. Any of the, say, contaminated material, say it's a bed, we would cut out the biohazard of the bed. That goes into our red bag, and the rest of the bed can go to the landfill.
Oh, okay.
So they weigh it. So we always try to keep that cost down.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut out the biohazard that gets separated. What they do is they pick it up from us and they take it to an autoclave. Quickest way to describe that is it's a giant pressure cooker.
Mm.
Sterilizes it, compresses it, and then now it can go into the dump.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So on that point, how different is it if you are cleaning up an area that's heavily impacted with fentanyl? Is it a very similar process at the end, or is there a different way of getting rid of that?
It's a different disposal method. It's considered at that point it's hazardous waste. So there's two. There's the biohazard waste, which is like the blood, the feces, bio waste, and then you have kind of hazardous waste, which, you know, if you've ever had household hazardous waste like oil, there's oil, there's paint, there's chemicals, there's appliances. We have to decontaminate the items thoroughly. We have to notify them what's in the material, kind of like getting rid of an asbestos. But yeah, it's something too that I think isn't quite up on the regulations. They're just slowly developing.
It's just new. It's too new.
It's very new.
Right.
And right now there's no actual, we do have a certification and training for fentanyl, but there's no like regulation on it.
Mm.
At least from right now, there's no regulation I know in Orange County to clean it up, except for maybe your HAZWOPER license, HAZWOPER 40, which is a training course to handle hazardous materials. But there's not much as far as that goes, which is interesting.
So you were mentioning a moment ago about the cleanup for hoarding and things like that, and you said it's become almost the largest part of your business. What you know, when you're coming across somebody's house, you can find all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what's your obligation if you're finding, you know, a firearm or pyrotechnics or anything else that goes on? What do you do then?
Oh man, I have a good one for that. Well, yeah, hoarding, they think, so it's known that one in every 50 people suffer from some sort of compulsive collecting.
Really?
One in every 50 is known, and they think it could be up to one in every 20.
Wow.
So very common. It's all the time, and we're doing our number one service that we do all the time. But we do come across, I mean, a lot of the jobs that we do, we're looking out for valuables for the family.
Mm-hmm.
They'll either write a list for us, or we just go, hey, this looks like it could be something important. If it's not trash, we have a safe section to place those items, and then the family can review it. Maybe they want to donate it. Maybe they want to get rid of it, something, or maybe whatever they please to do with it. They let us know, we're going to keep these ones. We'll don't, you know, you guys can donate this one, or we'll sell it, or whatever they want to do. We have ran into firearms plenty, and that is always a sticky situation.
Mm.
We notify the owner or whoever's around. Hey, we came across this. We're going to put it on somewhere high. Like say we found a gun just laying underneath trash. We're going to grab that and put it up somewhere high, notify them.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what action they want to follow, they can get rid of it. By what we did in the past was we had them call the local police department.
Right.
They came by and they recovered the gun, and it's usually not too big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it is scary coming across that. We did come across, this wasn't that long ago. This was at least 6 months ago. Came across these antique mortars. Okay. So there were huge mortars like bombs, right?
Right.
And at first, one of the guys that was with us, I don't know, he had some information about mortars. He was a military guy.
Right.
And he goes, oh no, that one's, you know, oh no, I think they're all duds. And he goes, that one, see how you move it? Cause we're handling this and it's big. It's like at least about chest high.
Right.
And, we're moving it. We think it's all fun. And he goes, oh yeah, you know, you move it. If they have something in it, you can hear like sand almost inside, rain stick a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the gunpowder.
Yeah.
So we're moving it around and, you know, he goes, oh yeah, you know, that one's probably, you know, they're just antiques and empty. And the lady that hired us too, it wasn't her place. It was her brother helping her brother out. Uh-huh. And she's from out of state. She didn't know what's actually inside of the house. And she goes, you know, he's big into antiques and collecting and stuff like that. I said, oh, okay, cool. So we're loading these up to get rid of them. And we do move. Then we find another mortar and we move this one, and this one has the sand in it. So now I'm freaking out.
Right.
And I tell the client, I said, hey, I can't just dispose of this.
Sure.
I don't know what's up with this. I can't dispose of this. And she goes, you know, we can just leave it by the dump. It's an apartment. So, you know, we leave it by the dumpster. Somebody will take it. Like,
ooh.
And I'm like, I don't know if I feel comfortable doing that. Right. And then she left. We're doing the cleanup, and the only thing that's going through my head is this mortar.
Yeah, sure.
And which her plan was it. I'm like, I can't leave it in the dump. Imagine throwing it in the dump. And so I end up calling the local authorities. It was in Anaheim. And they had the whole bomb squad out there.
Makes sense, yeah.
They shut down the streets. Yeah. They came and did their whole thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell the client either. Because
she didn't hear about it in the local news.
Well, they ended up getting a hold of her. She came and she was a little upset with us. And I said, hey, you know what? I just wasn't comfortable with that.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
So even though, and it was a dud. So they came in, they had all this stuff going on and they took them for us. Mm-hmm. Great. They took them for us. And I don't know what they're going to do with them. I think I heard that they bring all this stuff out somewhere and like light it on fire.
Yeah. They usually explode it. Right. Yep.
So and that was a very interest. I was calling up antique people, sending them photos, antique, you know, military photos. And one of them told us, he goes, man, if that thing, you know, that thing can be live and deadly. And I'm just like, all right, I can't take this chance.
Of course.
There's no way.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It was crazy.
Oh, that was
it was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. I mean, during it wasn't fun, but afterward, talking about it's easy.
Yeah. Good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good job. And so out of that, going straight on from this wow, amazing story there, you were mentioning earlier that the franchise Bio1 has actually been around 20 plus years. And how did you get into it? Like what,
yeah.
You know, you're walking around one day doing whatever, Corey, and then the next thing you decide, you know what, I'm going to go get rid of all this bio waste.
That's the number one question I get to. Everyone wants to know, how do you get into that? And it's not... You know, basically I was having a hard time with careers. I graduated late from college and I started looking into the job market. I'm like, man, I have to start all the way down at the bottom and work my way up. I'm like, can't afford that. I have a wife already. We were trying to start a family and I was working for the government, water districts. And, obviously I started there late too. So I wasn't making very much. I was working as a bartender, server, nice restaurant. And I was doing both of them and I was working like 60 plus hour weeks on my feet all day. And I was just hurting. And I was like, you know, I need to do something on my own. I got passed up for some promotion. I know that I felt was rightfully mine.
Right.
And I was just having a hard time. Just actually my whole life, I kind of had a hard time with jobs.
Right.
I thought I was a little smarter than the boss usually. So I started looking around for ideas, business ideas, and I'm looking on Buy Biz Sell, a website, it was kind of my goal was just get ideas and then start something up. So I'm scrolling through and this was right around COVID and I saw an ad that said high margin, recession proof and low investment startup.
Wow.
And I go, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
That's all I got. I don't have any money. It's a recession. We're in it because it was COVID or starting COVID. And so, yeah, we started inquiring. It didn't say what it was. And I talked to the franchise broker. He goes, yeah, it's a crime and trauma scene cleanup. I go, wow, I never even heard of that.
Right.
And yeah, I never knew it was a thing until he brought it up. And I remember watching a movie called Sunshine Cleaning back in the day, and it was like a little indie film. And there were crime scene cleaners. I said, whoa, there is something.
Sure.
So he gave me a list of franchisees to call that were part of Bio One. And I called them. I called up a lot of them. And I said, hey, you know, what do you think of this? He said, we love it. It's the most rewarding work we'll do. We're able to help people on some of their darkest days. It's exciting, as we talked about. It's very exciting. It's very different and sporadic. And I go, wow, you know, that's something that I feel like I can do. And not many, there's not a lot of people that can do, have the stomach for it either.
100%, right. Because there's all sorts of things, like the picture you showed me earlier. Like, yeah, it's, you know, it's hard.
It's very hard. And I knew that I did have the stomach for it. And I wanted more purpose to help people in my career. And I said, you know, let's do it. And I talked my wife into it. I made her watch the Sunshine Cleaning movie. And then we went out and got an SBA loan and took the plunge, and here we are. And it's been extremely, extremely rewarding and fun and exciting and scary and all of that.
Well, you're a true entrepreneur, and that really is what the American dream is, isn't it? Is you go out there, find something and build on it and make something of it. So good on you. Well done. Congratulations. That's awesome. So what would you say your main highlights when you look back on this whole journey, whether it's to do with the job itself or just the journey, what would you say highlights are that you might share to people who are thinking, who've been in your position where they're thinking, what am I going to do? Should I start my own business? Like, what would you share to the business folks?
Oh yeah. It's a big leap and it's a big change. It's all on you, and it's a roller coaster. You know, you're up and down, your emotions are up and down. I don't like when people make it seem like business is easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. There's days where we're on the top of the world, and then something happens, you're on the bottom of it, and then you got to go back up. But I think one of the biggest things that we've done is kind of learn how to scale a business. When I first was a business owner, I'm 35 now, so I started this, you know, 31. I never owned a business, never a manager. Franchise model was great for me, so I can get that support and get started up and get the support, get started up and learn how to run a business.
Right.
But that still wasn't as much as I needed.
Of course.
So you come in and you're doing all the work and you're doing the payroll and you're doing everything. I'm doing the cleanups, I'm doing the payroll. And finally it was to a point where, you know, we're hiring people and we're scaling up, and now I'm doing the marketing, and then I hired a marketing person. I have an admin. And really becoming a business owner instead of owning a job is right. Like, so you're a landscaper and you do all the work. You kind of consider it like you're owning a job. You're your own boss.
Mm-hmm.
But I hired a business coach so we can like focus on being a real business owner, where I'm not the one doing everything anymore.
Right, right.
So that was a big change to coming from. And I do like the control of trying to control everything.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
That's a hard thing.
Well, you care the most. It's your business, right? That's where it comes from. Right?
If anyone cared 80% as much as I did about the business, that would be amazing.
Right, right.
But no, it's really hard to find that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If they cared 50%, we'd be in a good spot.
That's enough, right, right.
So that's been a big thing. It's all risk. You're taking a risk no matter what you do. It's going to take money to make money. Everything's extremely expensive, as everyone knows. I mean, when you have to drive around, you know, doing estimates, whatever it is, it's costing you.
Mm-hmm,
everything costs a lot of money, and you realize that now. Business, because before you don't value it as much.
Don't do it. You haven't experienced it, have
right.
you? Right, right.
So when they're like, oh, it's $500 to do my awning, what the heck? And then you do it, and you're like, man, that guy didn't charge enough. You know, like, wait, how did he drove from there, and then he picked up the supplies that cost that much. He was here for a day and a half, and I'm like, wait, so his profit, oh
yeah,
oh, big you difference. Know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we have to. It is, and there's a lot of money you have to spend to get business.
Right.
Marketing is expensive, and you have to do it, and you have to do it a lot.
Right.
For us, we rely a lot on Google, because it's emergency.
Yes.
You know, you have to. Hey, somebody passed away, or grandma's a hoarder or something. What do I do? You go straight to Google.
Mm-hmm.
We're not necessarily a big referral business because sometimes you're embarrassed or you don't think anyone would know somebody.
Of course.
So you go to Google or something and, hey, crime scene cleanup or something like that, you have to show up there. And then they call you and you have to, you know, so we spend a lot to make sure that we're going to be found.
Now, talking about being found, what, you know, so people know, I'm assuming anyone could be a client, if regardless, right? Because you were mentioning you had the homeless area, the fact that, you know, somebody passed away in a home, things have to, certain things have to be a protocol to get rid of. So what is that? What does that look like? You say marketing, you know, where people can find you. What's the best place to find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, yeah, marketing. We, like you said, anyone can be a client. You never know when you need us until you do. But we do try to market to industries that might encounter our services more, like property manager,
right,
a real estate agent. Lately, we've been marketing to cities for the homeless encampments. Mm-hmm. Obviously, police contracts would be ideal. Right. We haven't gotten there yet. Very hard to tap into that.
Oh, that's a good one. So if there's a police department listing,
yeah,
then, you know, it would be, you're looking to help them service probably the homeless more than anything. But okay, that's good.
Or so, and this is something people don't really know, is that if there's a death or something that occurs in your home, that's on you to clean up. So if say there's a suicide in the house, they're going to come, the coroner's going to come, perform an investigation. They're going to remove the body and it's see you later, you know, figure it out. Right. That's where we come in and we work with some victim, victim nonprofit organizations that they don't necessarily refer us, but they provide resources.
Right.
Because when somebody passes away, there's a lot that has to be done. And one of them for them could be a cleanup where we would come involved. But yeah, people don't realize that, hey, they'll remove the body and then you got to figure it out. Right. If it's in public streets, say there's a fatal accident on the roads and there's an ejection or something, that's on the city and the police department.
Right.
They hire their contractor, comes out and cleans it up. But yeah, if it's in the home, then, or even in a parking structure that's private property in an apartment, then that could be left
to you guys.
Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned earlier about it took a particular individual to be an employee and this. And obviously, you know, as business owners, we all understand right now, it's not exactly the easiest thing to keep folks or whatever. What type of person would you think you would appeal to, you know, who may be thinking of working for someone like yourself?
Somebody that is really looking to help people. It has to be, there has to be something deeper in it. And obviously you have to have a strong stomach.
Okay.
Because what we do is yeah, you have to have a strong stomach, but looking to help people. And for me, honestly, it's not the skill set. I'm not super concerned with how good you are at cleaning or past, hey, I was a crime scene cleaner over here. I don't necessarily mind of that.
Right.
We need good people, people that we're in people's home. If we're doing hoarding, we're inside of somebody's intimate
property.
Space.
Right, right.
And we do have problems with stealing. And people will take stuff that doesn't belong to them. So we need people that don't have that, that care enough about what we're trying to do there to not, like, hey, these people are paying us to help them remove this situation, and for you to take something from them is so offensive. We had somebody in the past, maybe my first year, who stole something from like a suicide client. You know, and it was so sad because it's like they're dealing with so much, and how do you even feel that you can do that? You know, that's just like it's almost evil. So good people is honest, like good heart, like somebody that's just got a good heart. They care about individuals. That's the ideal applicant to me. The technical stuff, any of the demo work that we need to do to clean a scene, the PPE, all that stuff can be trained.
Right, right. The
other part, I think no matter what we paid our guys, if we paid them, you know, $200 an hour, I still think if you had that stealing inside of you that you would do it.
Right, right.
So
and then I'm assuming it's a job where career opportunities, if somebody was to go into this career, I'm assuming there's options.
Yeah, because we're also restoration, right? So you don't, I mean, not just crime scene. You have other service-based businesses like water, mold, fire. All those kind of operate very similar. Even window washers and carpet cleaners, all those service-based businesses have a very similar operating style, use very similar CRMs. There's obviously marketing position. There's sales. You know, you're doing the estimates. You're writing that. So you can GM, lead technicians, operations manager, there's actually a pretty big way to continue a career. Just have to find the avenue that you like. You know, if it's a sales, you have to be a salesperson.
Sure.
And, you know, marketing also, you have to be outgoing. But if it's operations that you're into and the technical side of things and the cleanups, then you can move up to that operations manager position, maybe even the GM type of scenario. Mm-hmm. Where, yeah, they could be careers for sure.
That's good. And just before I ask you one of our final questions that we ask everybody who comes on the podcast, if somebody is looking to find out more about your business or may even need of your services, what's the best way of getting to contact you? And if it's a telephone number, then share the number.
Yeah, we're available 24/7, 365 at 714-397-8375. And that's textable. Like I said, we have the phone on us all the time, and we always answer. And if we miss something, we're calling back right away, because everything, people need us. We need to be there. Our website's bio1orange.com. It's B-I-O-O-N-E, orange, like the color, .com. We email, text, call, whatever. We're always there.
That's really cool. So as we're drawing to an end of this this podcast, thank you very much, Corey, for coming on. We always ask our guest if they would like to do like a final share. And this could be anything. It could be something that we've skipped on. It could be something that we mentioned and then we didn't go in depth with. Or just even something just to share with our listeners. It's up to you.
You know, I think I like to go to the side of helping other businesses, whether it's, doesn't matter if it's crime scene or any other business. It's just because it's hard, right? You know how it is. It's hard to have a business, and it's, people think it's easy, and you have these people on Facebook and Twitter, and you just think everyone's just rolling in dough and that money just flies in, and it's, you know, oh yeah, just make a YouTube thing or make a TikTok and you're going to be rich. Like, nah, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I don't think a lot of them are like, you got to put in, a lot of these business owners, especially those influence type business owners, you got to put in the 90-hour weeks and you're up until 12 p.m. I don't believe in that.
Right.
I don't necessarily believe in that. I don't know if it's like the balance with family and stuff. I think you create an organized schedule about things that you need to get done, mm-hmm. get those done, and then you can kind of enjoy your life. And just, if you need to work on something, you work on it. You schedule time to work on it instead of just going, I'm going to work 90 hours and you just stay there and you're dialing at the computer and you're all over the place and you're unorganized, and you could work 90 hours a week or whatever, but that's not
so productive though, isn't it really?
It's so unproductive. Yeah, yeah. It's so you have something organized every night. Every night I organize my day. These are the things I need to get done. Every Sunday I organize my week. I schedule a time on my calendar. This is when I'm going to work on this. This is when I'm going to work on that. And we schedule everything around those. A couple books is, and these are just basic books, not even necessarily business books, but The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And then related to that book is The 4 Disciplines of Execution. Those two, if you kind of follow some of the framework that they have on getting things done and mm-hmm. staying organized and prioritizing the important things, I think you can have a little bit better life and enjoy business. And no one's going to enjoy 90-hour weeks.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Corey, for coming on. We really do appreciate your time. And congratulations on the news of your new baby as well. That's thank awesome. You. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Chamber Talk by North Orange County Chamber. To hear more interviews, visit chambertalk.podbean.com or look up Chamber Talk on your podcast channel of choice.